What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
Hey, I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week, offer up our thoughts and reviews and prayers. So let's get into it with the first
also,
one.
Also, just in case you're wondering, Alex isn't feeling well, and I'm stress cracked out, so this should be fun! Yeah!
Woo! Authors and artists, are you glad you put your time into the books? Because we're wilded over here.
Life has beaten us to a pulp!
we're questioning everything. Question mark? Superboy, the Man of Tomorrow, number one from DC Comics, written by Kenny Porter, art by Jenoy Lindsay. In this book, we're following Connor Kent, the cool Superboy, wears a leather jacket and sits on his chairs backwards and doesn't listen to his teachers and doesn't care about school. Anyway, he is a little bummed out because he's like the 56th super person who is currently operating a metropolis, decides to go off on an adventure of his own, runs straight into the Dominators and some gene-spliced monstrosities. Pete, what did you think about this one?
Well, first off, Man of Tomorrow gives you a little hope that maybe there will be a tomorrow. You know what I mean? So that's already a good start.
This is already off to a bad start.
Ooh.
I got to review our reviews as we go.
Cool. This is going to go great. I think this is, I love the art style here. This is a great first-ish. I love the kind of big bads we're going up against. This is kind of setting things up. I love Superboy's attitude and cool last panel. This is exciting read.
So this is very much on me. I spent the majority of this book being like, okay, what's the concept? Where are we going with this? Because I started off thinking, man, there's a lot of super people in Metropolis. Why do we need to follow another super person here? And then they immediately address that. And I was like, okay, great. So this is going to be about him traveling around the country or something like that, because he leaves and he kind of thinks about like, maybe I could go to other towns. And I was like, cool. And then they don't do that. Instead, he goes to the Fortress of Solitude and he gets this bracelet that's an experimental bracelet. And Kellex, the robot, is like, uh-oh, maybe you're going to be lost in the universe somewhere. And I was like, okay, so we're going to get like a quantum leap type thing where he's lost in the universe. That'll be fun. And then that doesn't happen either. Instead, he goes to this planet where he ends up fighting these gene-spliced things that are created by the Dominators. We get a sense that maybe there's some heroic gene-spliced things. And that ties into what Connor Kent is. He's half Superman, half Lex Luthor, which is his basic thing. And when we finally got to that, I was like, oh, okay. All right. I guess that's the actual concept of the book. And I feel pretty good about that. I think working off the identity of Connor Kent and coming up with villains that come into direct conflict in that, great. I'm very happy with it. It just teased me with these other concepts over the course of the issue where I almost wish they had gotten to this faster and skipped by those other concepts because those
got maybe it's coming back around to those things.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, I will say if it does come around to that, particularly if it's the like he keeps getting sucked and lost through the universe thing, very fun. I'm very into that. But as is, I am into this as well. I think Kenny Porter does a good job capturing Connor Kent's character. Also, Jenoy Lindsay's art is some really good, very solid superhero art. So fun start to this book.
Hey, can I say something I've always wanted to kind of talk to you about?
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, do you ever think maybe you should just read the comic instead of trying to write it as you read, where you're like, oh, great. Now I think this is where this is going to go. Oh, they should go here and they should do this.
So this is something that I thought was actually very interesting that I heard the other day, because when I read things, it isn't about trying to write it. It's about trying to figure it out. Like, you know, you're reading.
Yeah, you're trying.
Oh, well, hold on. This is, I want to just mention something here. Like when you're reading, when I'm reading a mystery, I'm like, okay, working out all the clues and trying to figure out who did it as I'm reading. And then like there's a swerve and whatever. I didn't realize not everybody interacts with entertainment that way until literally probably like 3 weeks ago when I saw some people discussing on Twitter that they're like, please just let me just sit back and enjoy my entertainment. And it wasn't even initially, I thought it was a discussion about, you know, the whole let people enjoy things thing that is its whole other separate issue. But that's not what it is. That's what I think maybe you're saying. That's how you engage with entertainment, is you just sit back and let it wash over you. That is not how I engage with it. And it's not even on a critical level.
I've been saying this to you for years. Years.
I know, but it took
a Twitter thread. It breaks my heart that 3 weeks ago you finally heard me. And no, it wasn't even me. It was somebody else. Yeah.
But what it made me realize is because I thought we were engaging differently critically, and I thought we were talking about the whole, like, let people enjoy things, which drives me up the wall. But it's actually that people's brains are wired different ways to engage with entertainment in different ways. So, yeah. I don't know. Interesting.
Some people can watch something.
So the answer, though, Pete,
and not try to figure it out before it happens.
No, but here's the thing. This is the reason that I bring it up, is people's brains are wired different ways. That is how my brain is wired. The same way your brain is wired one way, my brain is the other. So as much as you could come around to my way of doing, I also can't come away from your way of doing it. That's just how our brains work.
Okay.
There you go. And now that's the concept of
the show. I'm just trying to tell you that there's
Concept of the podcast, baby.
A more enjoyable way of, instead of you working
it's not
so hard,
this is how my brain, it's not work.
And just kind of
this is how my brain enjoys present. Interacting with things.
Okay.
It just is. That is how I enjoy it. You enjoy it a different way.
All right, Cornell.
Okay, Ithaca. Avengers Assemble Omega from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron, art by Aaron Cooter, Dexter Vines, Ivan Fiorello, Javier Garan, Jim Chow, and Alex Sinclair. This is the end of not just Jason Aaron's run on Avengers.
Culmination.
But basically everything that he's been doing at Marvel almost in its entirety since he started working there. It includes stuff from Thor. It includes stuff from Ghost Rider, et cetera, et cetera. So given all that, we got all of the Avengers all together working to stop a flood from wiping the multiverse clean caused by Mephisto, as well as slightly by the Supreme version of Doctor Doom. What did you think about this book, Pete?
This was such a, like... just kind of a cornucopia of awesomeness being kind of thrown at you. Like there's just, this is a huge ish. A lot happens. A lot gets wrapped up. There's a lot of cool Easter eggs. If you've been following Jason Aaron's run and all the stuff he's been doing, there's a lot of amazing payoffs here. I love the Old Man Phoenix stuff. The Doom killing Mephisto made me happy for a couple of seconds, but that didn't really stick. You know, the whole, Ghost Rider planet was really amazing. Planet of Vengeance is just it's weird and crazy, but then like ends in such a small kind of sweet cool way where it kind of ends with just a, you know, it's just a guy working on his car, you know what I mean, just like, you know, just old Ghost Rider just kind of working on his car, gathering parts in hell. I kind of really liked how it went from so big and so huge and all these awesome geek moments to like a really small moment at the end. I thought it was really powerful and very unique and cool and just amazing art and tons of action.
It's a phenomenal run, and this lineup of artists is a murderer's row. I don't know how I felt about them fighting a giant wave the entire time, but at the same time, the whole idea of them fighting against the lack of existence ties into what he's been trying to say about Avengers this entire time, that they are what make the world worth living in, you know, the multiverse worth living in. But what I loved about this even more is that he actually tied up all of his stories while putting all of these, we've talked a lot about how Jason Aaron treats us like a toy box, right? Yep. Like he basically was like, well, this is the games that I've been playing with all the toys. Going to put them back in the box here. By the way, all of these toys are still available to you. And that's what I loved about it, because I feel like too often these crossovers are about setting up the
everything's
going
to change after my, exactly.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And he was like, I'm wrapping it up, but here's some interesting concepts. They're still here. If they get picked up, that's great. If they don't, they don't. Have a nice day, everybody. And so it's great. It's a wonderful run. I think it's going to be looked at as one of the great runs on Avengers. There's some weird, wild ideas here. And it wrapped up in the lovely
weird,
fashion.
Wild stuff.
Weird, wild stuff.
It's wild stuff. Let me ask you another question. This is fun. After every review, maybe I ask you a question. Do you get that Murderer's Row reference that you made there? Do you understand what that's from? And
you're probably talking about the rap thing, but Murderer's Row, from like actual Murderer's Row.
The reference to Murderers Row, what that is referring to.
What are, just tell me what you tell me what you.
It's the New York Yankees way back in the day when it had like DiMaggio, you know, like all these
serial killers. I remember.
No. It was like they called it a Murderers Row because it was the pitcher. You know, if you're pitching, there would be a great player and then maybe an okay player, and then you know, so you got to rest.
And but, like, after they would win a game, they'd go out on the town and they'd kill women.
Right? Nope. No. Jesus.
No, I think that's what happened.
No.
Everybody was like, get inside. The Yankees just won.
Oh, my God, dude. This is really.
You got to hide.
I'm just wondering, you know, when you say Murderers Row, what do you mean? Because I know what the reference is, and I know it's a sports reference. So I'm just wondering when you use it, what you mean.
Right. But I think they were calling them a Murderers Row because it's like. It didn't start there.
It's
they
all
weren't.
Big hitters. It's all huge.
No, I understand, but it comes from literally having a bunch of murderers in jail all together. That's where the expression originally comes from.
I don't know. That should be interesting. I'm going to do a little research. I'm going to do a little research.
Yeah. All right. You look that up while I talk about the next book. Terror War, number one from Image Comics, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Dave Acosta. This book is a wild future set book from this team that I just mentioned, where these enormous psychic terrors are attacking a future society. There are people who can shoot brain bullets who are the only people that can take them down. They are fighting this terror war of the title. And it's kind of like Ghostbusters on crack is, I think, the best way of describing it. Absolutely wild. Not what I expected at all from the title. I thought we were going to be dealing with more like modern terror war. That's not what it is. It's more about the fears that are attacking us and how we attack them back. I thought this book was great. I loved it. I love the art. There's some big, gross ectoplasm stuff that happens throughout the book. The action is great, and there's a tease of some fun stuff coming down the road. Pete?
Okay, so you were right. It comes from a row of cells in a New York prison, popular term,
right. It's where,
the tombs.
Yeah, it's where the Yankees ended up when they finally caught them. They weren't able to catch them for a while.
The most dastardly of criminals. Interesting.
The Yankees.
Interesting.
The 1918 New York Yankees.
take it easy, little guy. oh, my God. Okay, so sorry about that.
Fine.
Of course, we're talking about.
Listen, we're both offoring up information. We're talking about terror war.
Number one. Here we go.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so
remember how when I asked you before we got onto this podcast where I was like, hey, Pete, I'm feeling a little under the weather. Let's not take 15 minutes to talk to the first three books. Well, here we are.
You said the first one, so I thought we were in the clear, so go fuck yourself. all right, so Terror War, I love the Blue City. It's cool. I love the look of this comic. Yeah, I just think this is really fun, and then kind of like the worst fears come to life is an interesting premise. It's very creative. I love this team. I hate the Credit Hounds. That was creepy as fuck and made me really worried that, like, in the future, if you don't pay a bill or something, that there are these animals that will fucking hunt you and then eat you. So that made me worried about the future, but I do think that this is really cool and worth checking out for sure.
Yeah, this is, and I don't say this dismissively, this is not particularly subtle satire about what the future potentially could become with the addition of this very supernatural, weird terror attack thing that is happening. But I assume as we get into it, we're going to get a lot more of that. So smart book, excited to read more.
Yeah. The idea of brain bullets was just really awesome. I love
that. Cool. I would love to have that. All Eight Eyes, number one, from Dark Horse, written by Steve Fox, art by Piotr Kowalski. This, imagine, if you will, that there were giant spiders literally everywhere, and nobody talked about it. It was very secret, and sometimes they would kill people. In this book, there is a homeless man who has been trying to kill these spiders his whole life. A younger guy gets together with him because he sees one of these giant spiders and starts to be trained in his ways. I have some questions I'll get to in a second, but overall, I thought that I hate spiders. I cannot deal with them.
Oh, yeah.
So
no,
I had a hard time dealing with this book.
This is a fucking nightmare of a thing.
Nightmare of a book.
Oh, my God. Like this, it's, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, my God. Yeah, can you imagine? Like, oh, imagine a world. This freaked me the fuck out where I was like, I really hope this isn't like there isn't a root of truth in any of this, because this is like such a, like, I've gone down horrible Google rabbit holes of just like coconut spiders, where they're these jack spiders that are so strong they can rip open coconuts. So like, this is a real nightmare of mine come to life in this comic. So this was hard to read, but also really cool and creative. I liked this kind of like playing on a real fear and just being like, imagine if spiders were like a real problem that nobody talked about. Kind of like rats in New York City that people kind of joke about, but no one really does anything about them.
Well, it's essentially a vampire tale, but with giant spiders instead. Yeah. So it works on that level. The question that I was going to ask that I feel like we will get as we roll through the book is, why is nobody talking about this? Like, I feel like the excuse for...
Spider. You know what I mean? Like, nobody. There's a big spider who's running this stuff who's like...
There's got to be something like that, because the idea that there are giant spiders running everywhere, not just in New York City, but all over the world, and people are like, ooh, we can't talk about that. We got to cover that up. Seems very iffy to me. So but I think there's an explanation coming.
But I also do like this thing where it's kind of like this vampires or ghosts, or like kind of like Men in Black, where it was like, once you know the truth, your kind of real life is ruined. Like, you can't really go back. Like, our kind of main character, the younger guy, can't go back to his old life because now he knows that there's giant spiders everywhere.
Yes, I read the book. I'm aware of the plot. I just need some answers in terms of how the world works. That's all I'm saying. But the action is very cool throughout. It plays out like a big budget action movie.
It does. Very fun. Yeah. It's cool.
Let's turn to what I know is one of your favorite books of the week, DC Silent Tales, number one from DC Comics by Gustavo Duarte. This is, as the title implies, several short tales set in the DC universe that are mostly wordless, other than newspapers people are reading or otherwise. Pete, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, first off, some really fun covers here. This is just really cool stuff where the art is leading the way. Words suck. Use art to tell stories. I just love it. It's really impressive. I think you can tell a story without using words, and they really kind of lean into that in this issue, and it's a ton of fun and super creative and letting the art be the words.
It is very delightful. I really enjoyed all the stories. A couple of things that I'll throw out there. First of all, that is this very cartoony animated art, but there's some pretty dark things that happen throughout this book. So don't immediately hand it to a child in your life without giving it a little look-see first.
Or do
and really fuck them up.
Yeah. And
the other thing that I'll mention, and I know, Pete, you're going to take exception to me even saying this, but I think sometimes when there's a book with no words,
don't say it.
I get a little worried about like, oh, is this going to be too quick of a read, or you're just going to kind of flip through this and nothing's going to happen? But this is great. Like, this is just all comedy bits. It plays like Looney Tunes cartoons or something. And it's a really big, nice package as well. So you're really getting your money's worth out of this at the same time.
Yes, you are. Thank you.
Mostly, I think I've implied this on the show, I don't really care about the art. Like, I just read the words and just like go through the thing. It's one of those brain things. One of those
brain things. Just enjoy the nice thing. Don't talk about how it could be a negative.
I think it's okay on our comic book review podcast to talk about people getting their money worth by buying the comics. Comics are expensive, buddy.
I hear you, man. I'm just saying, just say it's great.
Would you rather have a sandwich or a comic? Because a sandwich can feed you, but a comic can feed your brain.
Wow.
I don't know exactly what I was saying here. Why don't we move on? Punisher number 11 from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron once again, art by Jesus Saiz and Paul Azaceta. First things first, I didn't realize this. Maybe this news was already out there, but turns out this is a limited series, and the next issue is the last issue.
Wow.
So I know, but we're really getting to it here. This is bringing to a head as the Punisher is fighting the assembled Marvel heroes who want to get the Beast out of him. Meanwhile, Maria, his resurrected wife, Jesus is revealing Christ. Some big things about what down on the day, that day in the park. Are you going to be all right?
No.
Are you going to be doing the John Bernthal Punisher?
No. Yeah, this was one batch, two batch. No, this was really intense. This was intense for a lot of reasons. What's intense about it is Jason Aaron's attempting to kind of like rewrite Punisher's origin story a little bit here, giving a little bit more context, not rewrite it, but kind of tweaking some things.
Yeah.
But
he's more solving a mystery than rewriting history is what you'd say, right?
Oh, wow. Wow. I liked how that rhymed there. Fucking Professor Logic. All right.
Punisher Tales.
Oh my God. Let's back up the truck here. Let's first talk about the great stuff that's in this issue. Okay. You've got the Punisher just fucking like throwing heroes around like they're nothing. You know what I mean? Like Wolverine's coming at him. He's like, who are you? Okay. Oh, you want to play with me? Bye bye. So I was really enjoying the Punisher kind of powered up, because a lot of the times when Punisher's going against, you know, the big superheroes, you know, because he's the bad guy. It's more realistic. This is just a little bit more fun. You don't get to see Punisher all powered up, kind of being able to have his way. So this was kind of nice in that respect. But then we kind of we get some big reveals, some big turns. And it was a lot. It was really very powerful. And what's very interesting is, you know, this idea of like him being, it reveals so much, like having this relationship and thinking that, you know, like, okay, I'm struggling with some things. I'm dealing with a lot of post-traumatic stress and trying to be there for my family, but also he's gone a lot, and seeing her side of things of just kind of being alone in the tent with a gun and like being hit on at a gun range, like all these kind of things that Maria's going through was kind of awesome and powerful to think about. And just, you know, like couldn't even get out the full word until the stuff happens at the picnic that we know happened. Just so powerful, really just fantastic, just kind of discovery and to kind of explore that. It was just really very interesting and very hurtful, very just kind of can really crack you open emotionally. So really kind of helped kind of explain a little bit of maybe why the Punisher did the things that he did. But then to have her find out about the things that they did for the family in their name and then shoot him for it was just holy shit. You know what I mean? That was just like a big kind of crazy reveal that I wasn't ready for emotionally, but kind of does make sense. But man, just this has been such an amazing roller coaster of a bunch of issues of Punisher that Jason Aaron has just absolutely killed. As a Punisher fan, it's been really eye-opening and amazing to kind of witness and relive. I mean, sometimes when you're redoing origin stories, you can kind of be like, all right, here we go again. But this was done in such a unique, cool way, and the art is also just top-notch.
We've said this a couple of times about this book, but this is almost more of a Maria Castle book than it is a Frank Castle book. And we're getting that in a big way in this issue. Like you mentioned, huge gut punches across the board. I think whether you're a Punisher fan or not, emotionally, this will still work for you.
Yeah.
And great stuff. I've said before, every issue, pretty much, the dual artist, Jesus Saiz, in the present day, Paul Azzaseid in the past, it works so well together. As much as I'm enjoying this book, I'm glad they're going to be tying it up with the last issue, because it's clearly going to be going out on a high note. Summoner's War Awakening, number one from Image Comics, written by Justin Jordan.
I mean, you could just enjoy how it ends. You had to be like, it's got to go out on a high note. Otherwise, you know.
Man, you're just taking issue with
everything.
Just
let it be what it's going to be, man. You know what I mean? Jesus.
Ah, sorry, man. I also wanted to say real quick that I probably should have said Frank Tales instead of Punisher Tales. That would have worked better with the DuckTales joke. Yeah. The last kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. Summoner's War Awakening, number one from Image Comics, written by Justin Jordan, art by Luca Claretti. This is continuing the Summoner's War story, and I gotta say, having only read the first issue, I think, of Summoner's War and not being familiar with the game, I didn't know what was going on here, but I liked looking at it. Pete, what about you?
Oh, interesting. Of course, me, I'm an OG Summoner's War player, kind of day one. So I definitely, no, I'm just kidding. I really thought this was a cool story, kind of a great kind of adventure tale kind of cast, and love the art style. I loved also the big kind of like a bad guy breaking through walls like the Kool-Aid Man. I thought that was really fun. I feel like this was a great first issue, kind of setting things up. You know, I think, you know, we've seen the kind of elf quest type of thing where it's like, are we going to get a team together? We're going to go on this kind of adventure. So I didn't really need a lot to kind of understand what was going on, but I had a good time with it. I'm excited to see Wahapies.
The Cult of That Wilkins Boy, number one from Archie Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Dan Schoening. This is another horror reimagining of a classic Archie Comics character. In this case, that Wilkins boy who is now has sold his soul to the Crossroads Devil to become a huge music superstar. His 7 years are up and the devil is coming for his soul. There's some gross twists and turns here. I gotta say, very similar to a lot of these one-shots that Archie is putting out, I like them so much, I wish they weren't just one-shots. Like, this story in particular here felt a little compressed. It was going so quick to me, and I liked what was going on here, and I wanted to see more. And I understand that's part of the point, but I almost wish this had been a 4-issue miniseries instead of a one-shot comic.
Okay, well, let me just give you your review if it was a 4-issue miniseries. You know, I feel like they would have done a better job if it was just one issue, because I feel like they really stretched the story out too much, and I feel like if it was one, it would have been better. So I think this is, first off, a really cool, unique twist on a tale we've heard.
Wait, sorry, should I do your review of it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Well, this creeped me the fuck out. The art is bananas good. It's so good. It's like taking a fresh banana and squeezing it in your mouth and going, yum, yum, bananas. And it's really good, but like it's interesting and it's cool and like it's good. And like it really creeped me the fuck out, but like the art was good and it's worth it for the art alone.
Wow. Well done, sir. Thanks. You want me at the end. You, the bananas part in your mouth made me a little worried about how you were going to land it, but I think you really killed it at the end.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks, especially man. Like the part where you kind of got lost in what you were saying, but then it kind of went back to what you were saying.
Yeah, so that was purposeful.
That really made me think it was me talking.
Yeah, you should listen to your Punisher review that you just did sometime.
Oh, God, I can't listen to myself. I'm awful. But yeah, I agree. I think this is, the art is awesome and it is super fucking creepy.
Gotcha. Gotcha, you son of a bitch. Anyway, this is good. I'm happy for them to keep doing these one-shots. It's fine because I like the stuff that they're exploring. And if it makes business sense to them, it makes business sense. You know?
I mean, Archie's doing a great job of really kind of getting outside of what we think of Archie Comics and making some really cool creative choices.
She-Hulk, number 12 from Marvel, written by Rainbow Rowell, art by Andres Genelet and Joe Quinones. This is an anniversary issue. So the first part, we're getting a story of Jen as she is dealing with this new, very sexy criminal who maybe she's sparking up a little bit of thing with. Yeah, while Jack of Hearts, the guy that she's
that's
with.
That's who I'm shipping. I'm shipping
it too, but he's starting to pull
like
back
you're into
a little
the new.
Bit.
You think you're
It is a romantic complication. It is basically like you've got the she's not exactly the Mary Jane, but like if she's Spider-Man.
No, don't you
Jack of Hearts is the Mary Jane. This new dude is 100% the Black Cat. And it's like, she can't quite touch Jack. It's perfect. Like, it is a perfect romantic situation where she loves Jack of Hearts. I don't know if they said I love you yet, but like, she clearly wants to be with Jack of Hearts, but can't touch him and can't be with him the way that she wants to be with him. He also needs to figure his shit out because he doesn't know what's going on with him.
Fucking A, come on, Jack.
And then you got like this sexy dude who she can touch who is here, who clearly is into her and like playing with her on the She-Hulk level, while Jack of Hearts is engaging her on the Jen level in a certain sense, you know, intellectually versus physically. It's going to come to a head at some point. And that's like perfect romance setup. So I'm very excited for that. And then we get this great backup story that has Jen having a book club with a bunch of the female characters of the Marvel Universe.
And nobody's read the book.
So much fun. So much fun. What a great package from top to bottom.
We should do a book club. You know what I mean? Meet once a week and talk about comics. Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be so cool.
That would be fun. And we definitely find out who read the books and who didn't.
All right. So first off, it's 175. So it's an anniversary issue, which is great. So you got a lot of extras in there. And I feel like they did a great job of giving us more. She-Hulk is such a great title and has been for years. And it is in great hands. The art style is fantastic. I love the writing. It really feels like She-Hulk talking. So I'm having a blast with this. The ships are great. I'm you know, the will they won't they is driving me nuts, but I'm pulling for Jack of Hearts here. So this is a great time. And I also really love the kind of cast of characters with the book club here. And I just think they're having a blast with this book, and it really comes through.
Deceased, War of the Undead Gods, number 8 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Trevor Hairsine and Lucas Meyer. This is the end. What?
I was just reading over the notes, and I just want to give a shout out to Awesome Andy because he is awesome.
Oh, yeah. Awesome Andy is awesome. This, I mean, just to mention about that, this felt the closest to Dan Slott's run on She-Hulk that we've gotten so far, and I think that was purposeful.
Also, having Reed Richards be a douchebag, classic. Loved it.
So this is the last issue of Deceased. They have wrapped up the saga that they began a couple of titles back here as the assembled heroes have found out what is behind the anti-life plague and decided to take it straight to them. It ends in a surprisingly quiet and sad and poignant way here at the end. I'm sure we're going to get into spoilers. If you don't want to know, turn away. But Pete, this had to hit you right in the feels, I imagine.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, very touching moment between the light costume Batman and Superman here. It's just such an amazing last panel and very touching stuff that I really felt. But, yeah, this was such a huge kind of arc and really fun, a lot of crazy stuff. But to see it kind of end this way caught me off guard, and I was super moved and impressed. I was clutching my pearls when I was reading it. So
there's also a very fad moment, which is kind of Tom Taylor showing off as a writer here, where he loops back to a thing that Green Arrow said, I don't even know how many issues earlier, like easily 12, 24 issues earlier, that he had a line of dialogue from Green Arrow that becomes immediately relevant to the final gambit here in this book, where I was like, smart. I see what you did there. Good job. But great series. I was really impressed by this. Yes. And it's a good mission statement for the DC Universe, showing how they fight against the dark with their light. Loved it. Yeah. No One, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Brian Buccioletto, art by Geraldo Borges. This is a murder mystery slash, not political thriller, but like journalism thriller running in the Massiverse universe. We really dug the first issue of this. What did you think about the second one, Pete?
Well, I love the action in this. This is very like interesting, kind of like Batman tech character. Love the story around him, the kind of like older cop who is being forced out, trying to figure out who killed his son. Like the art, super tight bananas. I think this is just going great. Like I the kind of cameo by No One here. I just think this is very kind of unique and cool, and I'm very much enjoying this.
Yeah, this issue was a little denser text-wise, I think, than the first issue, which is necessary. There's a lot of information coming in there, but it didn't feel as propulsive to me as the first issue, though I totally agree with you on the action sequences. I thought they were great. I'm still really into this. I'm really into all the Massiverse stuff. That was my one little quibble with this issue that kind of held me back a little bit.
I think it's just because you're sick.
Might be that too. The Vampire Slayer number 13 from Boom Studios, written by Sarah Galley, art by Kath Lobo. This is kicking off the final arc of this series, which really bums me out because this is the best that Buffy the Vampire Slayer has been, maybe since the TV show, in my opinion. Buffy finally has her Slayer powers back. She is getting back into shape thanks to working with Faith. Willow is no longer destroying the universe, and instead we're getting back to Baby Crab, or at least Baby Crab 2.0, who is growing to gigantic crab size and may or may not destroy the universe at the end of the day. There's a bunch of things for fans of Buffy the Vampire Slayer that are being worked in here in an interesting way. The cliffhanger at the end of the last issue is we finally met Tara, who is helping Willow get control of her powers, her augmented powers. There's an interesting tease in here. I don't know if you picked this up as well, but that this version of Tara might be trans. They don't come out and say it, but there's a very strong implication there, which I thought was an interesting little detail to throw in. Yeah. And we get a big reveal at the end here to a classic Buffy the Vampire Slayer location. We already kind of know, if you've seen the show, the villain that we're going to meet in this final arc, who is tied very directly to Spike, starts with a D, R, U. You know where I'm going with this.
Oh, anyway,
you don't necessarily, but listeners probably
do. Talking about Drew. Yeah, D-R-U, Drew.
Drusilla. Yeah. Drusilla, who's Spike's girlfriend, is definitely going to show up here. And that's very exciting. I am loving this. Pete, how are you feeling?
Well, for me, it was just like I was so stressed out about Buffy, you know. So seeing her finally get her powers and kind of like come back into like, okay, now this is the Buffy comic and everything's kind of coming together. And I was like, okay, great, here we go. Because it was like this kind of slow kind of build towards what we know. And in the beginning, there were some really cool, interesting choices, but now we're kind of like really kind of rolling. And so I felt like this is hitting its stride right at the key time. But yeah, I mean, I'm not as much of a huge Buffy head as you are, but I'm still having a great time with this. Loving it.
Red Goblin, number 3 from Marvel, written by Alex Pakdadal, art by Jan Basaldúa. I don't know why I said that twice just now. Anyway, Norman Osborn's grandson has a symbiote who has turned him into the Red Goblin. Norman is being attacked by one of the old hobgoblins in the sewer, as well as a whole goblin army. So lots of goblins. That's what we're doing here. And the Red Goblin fights back here. There's some twists and turns. Pete, what'd you think about this one?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we get some cool, interesting flashbacks. Then the kid is just chill with a nice old lady in the alley. He's got a dog who is scary in the beginning, but then it isn't scary. You know what I mean? The classic kind of dog setup. Yeah, I don't know what we're doing with this book, but it's here. And there's a lot of stuff, a lot of cool action stuff and more interesting Osborn stuff. But like, I'm not, as a comic book fan, I'm not like, you know what I could go for? More fucking goblins. Let's go.
Well, that was one of the things I was trepidatious about with the first issue, and I think they really run me over here. This is a wash of a lot of goblins in this issue. I think I still like this, and the art is really solid superhero-wise, but yeah, it's a lot of just goblin action. We get a tease that the next issue we're going to have Norman in the Gold Goblin costume when we already have a Gold Goblin title. So I worry that this is not giving us something different with the Red Goblin character. That's what I want to focus on, and that's what I'm interested in. So maybe we'll get back to that the next issue, maybe not. But I'm still on board. I'm still curious to check out at least one more. Wonder Woman number 798 from DC Comics, written by Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad and Josie Campbell, art by Amake Nahulpan and Caitlin Yarsky. This is tying into the Revenge of the Gods storyline, which has Shazam and Wonder Woman teaming up to fight back against Hera and the assembled Knights of the Gods. Here we get to see Wonder Woman Shazam in this issue, something everybody has always dreamed of. Pete,
Bless you, Alex. Yes. All right. So here we go. Wonder Woman. First off, some cool ass covers here. But unfortunately, it's kind of like that classic scenario of the cover kind of spoiling what's going to happen a little bit, where Wonder Woman gets the Shazam powers. And because you saw the cover, you were kind of like, okay, I know this is coming. But, you know, I can understand, like, if you were going to put a cover, like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to do that? But it just kind of ruins a little bit of the buildup. But, yeah, I think I love the, you know, Wonder Woman fighting Hera. Yeah, I think this is just kind of great DC-style art and action. And I think it's a great package with the backup story and everything. So having a blast with it.
I'm having a good time with this, too. In particular, I know we've been very complimentary of this team anyway, but Josie Campbell and Caitlin Yarcy's backup story. Mary Marvel is the one who gives up her powers to help save Wonder Woman and turn Wonder Woman into Shazam Wonder Woman. So we get to see what that means pretty for cool. Mary Marvel next. And they put a great amount of heart and character into this, as well as the action scenes by Caitlin Yarsky are really fun and well planned out. Really enjoyed reading that story in particular. I'm going to be bummed if Mary Marvel is no longer a Shazam at the end of this, but I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that would be a bummer.
The Forged, number two from Image Comics, written by Greg Rucka and Eric Trautman, art by Mike Henderson. This is following a bunch of mech warriors who have been crash-landed on a harsh alien planet. They've been sent there for an unknown mission. We find out what that mission is this issue. This book is action-heavy, super gross, super nuts, very fun.
Yeah, I also really appreciate the kind of intro part that gets you everybody caught up in case you know, like, what is this comic again? So awesome for that. Yeah, tons of action, interesting turns in the story, super tight bananas art. I'm really enjoying this comic. New character was a little bit over sexualized, but it's early on, so I'm excited to see what happens after that.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this. I think the last time we talked about this book, we tried to describe it with a bunch of different movies, and it still feels a little bit like Predator, Alien with mech suits kind of thing. Great. I'm loving this book. Like you said, Mike Henderson's art is just next level here, particularly having a bunch of characters in mech suits, being able to tell which one is which. Partially that's up to the coloring, but I think that's also up to the characterization that Mike Henderson puts in it, and that should not be underrated. Howerer, I still can't say that word, number three from Boom Studios, written by Justin Jordan, art by Bram Revel. This is to take place in a small town where all of the teenagers have been ritualistically slaughtered the last issue. Now the few remaining teenagers are trying to make it out alive. There's a big twist here at the end of the issue. But this is basically as brutal as you'd want with a slasher horror movie, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, this is just nonstop intense. I love the art style. There's so many twists and turns, crazy last page. I mean, it's a hell of a ride. I can't wait till the next issue.
The Excellent, number two from Marvel, written by Peter Milligan, art by Mike Allred and Laura Allred. You know, my big complaint with the last issue of this was there wasn't enough focus on the social media parody, and I think we get back to that in a big way in this issue, as we have two teams who care less about saving people than gaining and losing followers on social media. I thought this was very fun and a back to form for this book.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth it for the Allred's art alone. That Zeitgeist is a real douchebag.
Yeah, he keeps vomiting on people and burning them.
People who are, you know, trying to do things for him, you know?
Which do you think is worse? Is the vomiting on them and melting them or mistreating people?
I'm going to say the murdering them. But Yeah, also mistreating is pretty bad.
Yeah, it's a real murderer's row, right, Pete?
Hey! I don't think we're using that right there.
Superman, look it up, we'll check. Superman number three from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Jamal Campbell. In this issue, there is a plague of parasites who have taken over Metropolis, including taking over Superman. And finally, after three issues, Superman has to come for Lex Luthor's help. I am loving this book. I can't believe how much I'm loving it, particularly how different it is from the other Superman book that Philip Kennedy Johnson is doing. But the horror elements with the parasite Superman, the way that Jamal Campbell draws him are great and terrifying. The way that they work in Livewire here and Lex Luthor and Supercorp and all of these other things is very fun. It's just building out to a really different, really exciting Superman book. And I'm having a great time reading this.
Yeah, I thought there was just like a super adorable moment between Lois and Clark here. Just kind of a nice, sweet moment. And then, you know, I don't know about that giving your arch nemesis a watch thing. But other than that, I'm having a blast with this.
Well, so what I think...
There's got to be a tracker or some kind of audio recording device. What Joshua Williamson
is working off of here is I think he is doing the All-Star Superman, Lex and Superman dynamic, where Superman really wants to find the good in Lex and push him to do better. He doesn't trust him. He doesn't think that he's going to do the right thing, but he wants to give him a chance to do the right thing.
Oh, yeah, but would you give your arch nemesis a watch? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, what kind of watch? Like a Mickey Mouse watch, a Swatch?
Dude, you saw the watch he gave him. It was fucking really nice.
Sweet watch.
Yeah, it's a fucking sweet
watch. No, I wouldn't do that. I'd give that to one of my friends, probably. You're right. Good point. Hitomi, number 5 from Image Comics, written by H.S. Tak, art by Isabella Mazzanti. In this issue, I think we're wrapping this up here, maybe? Is this the last issue of this book? Where we've been following this young girl, and unbeknownst to her, the man who killed her family, traveling on a journey together. This issue, she's turned into a little assassin of her own. It all goes down as he runs to save her. Pete, I know you love this book so far. How do you feel about how it wrapped up?
Well, first off, this is amazingly super tight bananas art, like just unbelievable art. And, you know, you get that little recap in the beginning, which I really appreciate about it. I was really worried about when she found out that the dude that she's been friends with and traveling with has been the guy who killed her family. So I thought they handled that in a very, very cool way. And I thought it really turned out great. I love this kind of run. I thought this was really an interesting story told very well and in kind of a mature way, even though it's kind of old in time. So I very much appreciated it.
House of Slaughter, number 14 for Boom Studios, written by Tate Bromble, art by Antonio Fuso. In this issue, we're continuing to follow the story of Henry Boucher, I think, is the name of the character. Whatever it is our main House of Slaughter dude who we've been following. He's trying to save a bunch of kids. Things turn out really bad for him by the end of this issue. I gotta say, I think this is maybe my favorite issue of this book so far.
Wow.
The way that the tension builds up over the course of this is unbearable.
So stressful. Yes.
So stressful to read.
Oh my
but
God,
it
dude.
Builds so slowly and so carefully. Yes. I was very impressed.
Yeah, I mean, I have my notes like, oh shit, it goes down in this issue. I mean, you know, there's a saying, a woman scorned, but I feel like anybody scorned, you know. This is a really intense issue. That is really well done. But the art is unbelievable, beyond super tight bananas. This is just such a cool story. And what's really been impressive about this whole kind of House of Slaughter kind of, you know, whole kind of all the different titles underneath it and stuff is really impressive, the storytelling that's happening here. You know what I mean? It's not just all monsters and action and like the tales that they're weaving in between all of this madness is really impressive. This is such a feat of writing, and their art is just unbelievable as well. But man, I've just been so impressed with all these books and all the different avenues we've been exploring through this. This has been such a cool ride. I'm really impressed with this.
The Amazing Spider-Man, number 24 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by John Romita Jr. In this issue, Spider-Man is desperately trying to get back to Mary Jane to save her from this dude who's trying to kill her in another dimension. And we find out some information at the end of this issue about why Mary Jane and Peter are no longer together. Pete, go on your rant. Go ahead.
Okay, so this is what we're doing? This is it? the whole reason we had to break up this relationship and Mephisto and doing like whisper deals with Mephisto is so Mary Jane could have a family with some other dude. Like, that's the big move we're doing, Marvel. Like, that's the whole let's just ruin Spider-Man as a character and like throw this one of the greatest ships of all time into the winds like it never fucking mattered. Just so Mary Jane could have a family on the side or with somebody else. And I'm sure it's a lovely situation, but like, what the fuck? So I hope everybody's happy. I hope everybody's having a great time because.
I gotta say, I don't get this either. And the reason I don't get this, you know, I'm not necessarily as hardcore on certain aspects of what you just said, but they've been building this up as here it goes. This is one of the biggest storylines we've had since the death of Gwen Stacy. Yep. And this, I mean, we already spoiled it, so we can talk about spoilers here. But at the end of the issue, we find out that enough time has passed in this other dimension that Mary Jane and this dude she was with are now together. He has two kids. Maybe they are their kids. We don't exactly know all of the details. But for Peter, it's been like two terrible days in the real world and then he comes back.
It's a castaway situation. You know, Tom Hanks is stuck on an island. Meanwhile, you know, his wife has to live another life and they have to move on. And, you know, so much time has passed. Right. How long can you wait for somebody?
Here's my problem with that. My problem is we already knew this. Like, we knew this from the first issue that she already had a family. So the revelation that she has a family, it's more, oh, okay, that's an explanation of how it happens.
How is this?
But it doesn't make as big of an impact because we already knew this. It's just kind of filling in the gaps at the current point. So
right, but what's the reveal that's going to make this feel better? You know what I mean? Is it the reveal that, like, MJ was just so sad and then finally
I assume we're going to find out she was there for 15 years or whatever, you know?
Well, like, that's the thing. Like, if she's been there a week, I'm going to be pissed.
She had two full-grown babies? I think it's pretty clear that, like, they already said the time flows differently in this dimension, so it's pretty clear given the age of the kids.
What's enough time to be okay to move on from Peter Parker? You know what I mean?
Like, so, well, let's game this out, right? Okay, you're with the person you love. Mm-hmm. That person leaves. You're with another person of whatever gender you're attracted to or type of person you're attracted to.
Thank you for keeping it open. I really appreciate
that. Yeah, like how long do you wait? Because, like, I would say 5 minutes seems fair before you move on, right?
Dude, you're a family. You are married with kids. You want your wife to wait 5 minutes?
My wife is upstairs
minutes?
Right now as we're taping this. I am effectively single.
So I just want to get this straight. If you don't
make it back
upstairs. We're
together, right? Like, that was my impression from this podcast.
No,
we've been talking
I'm
a lot.
I'm not raising your family.
This is very romantic, Pete. I'm having a very romantic time.
So if you don't make it back upstairs, your wife can just move on. Like, you know what I mean?
She
like,
might have. I don't know. That's the price that I'm willing to pay for doing this podcast. Maybe I lose her in the process, you know?
Wow. Worth it.
At least I got this review of The Amazing Spider-Man 24 on the internet.
But that's the thing. Like, now I have to read the next issue and wonder how much time is enough time where I'm okay with it. And then open
here's
to
the
MJ
thing.
Having
just
a
to,
whole...
Just to answer
this
what you're
insane.
Saying.
This is insane. Like, why are we doing
100%
this?
Seriously, you're not supposed to be okay with it. We've been riding with Peter the entire time, not MJ. And I think we're going to get filling in the
MJ's
gaps from her perspective.
Side, yeah.
But Peter is devastated, and he has been devastated this entire time while we follow him. You're supposed to be feeling that as a reader. You're not supposed to be happy about this. You're not supposed to be like, you know what? That was enough time for MJ. Sounds good for me. You're supposed to be like, oh, my God.
Can't wait to hear about her family.
Well, you're supposed to feel exactly what you're feeling, which is that this is one of my favorite couples. I can't believe they're not together. Whatever the circumstances, this sucks. Yeah. So it's going to continue to suck. My qualm about it is, what else are we going to find out about the story? Because I'm not into this beardy dude with the knife. I'm not necessarily into, like, this other beardy dude that MJ is with. I don't really know anything about these kids. I need to get more emotionally invested in this whole
story. I thought you were
going to
say, I hate these kids.
No, I just don't know them. But I need a little bit more on this. And presumably, we've been told that's what we're getting over the next two issues is more of this. So maybe I will be more into it. But right now, my reaction to this after this was like, okay.
I just don't know what I'm supposed to feel. Am I supposed to be excited to get to know MJ's new family?
You're supposed to feel bad. You're supposed to feel like, bad about the whole thing.
I'm going to be pulling for this other guy because he was just, you know, happened to be in there. I mean, what kind of dimension was this? Were they fighting for their lives constantly and somehow they felt love and it got them through a horrible time?
I think so. Here's my guess, and I think this is probably a pretty fair guess. They were fighting for their lives, constantly running away from the beardy dude, trying to stay alive. At a certain point, they started to feel like, you know what? It's been too long. It's been years. Peter's not coming back. And they were there for each other, and something that they had that was this bond eventually grew into something more. It grew into love. They effectively got married together. They had children together. And then all this time later, 15 years or whatever it is, Peter came back.
Ugh.
So you're supposed to feel bad about it. And it's going to feel bad for MJ as well, because she's like, oh my God, I loved you and I thought I lost you. Yeah. So it's going to hurt.
Yeah. And then what does MJ do? Does she ditch her new family?
Clearly not, because we've already seen she's with them. So,
oh my God, this is not fun. This is not like a fun arc that is getting me excited to read more comics.
Best case scenario, the beardy dude kills her husband, who she loves, and her children, who she also loves. Uh-huh. And then they take care of the beardy dude, and she's like, now I'm back together with Peter Parker, this dude who sucks.
This feels awful. This feels like we can't win.
Nope, really can't. It's a no-win scenario. Thank you, Marvel. Thank you, yeah, Spider-Man.
Thanks for ruining Spider-Man. Thank you.
Thank you, Spider-Man. Nightwing number 103 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, C.S. Pacott, art by Travis Moore, Vasco Georgiev, and Eduardo Pansica. In our front story, we are following the Titans trying to keep a young girl safe by making deals or not with Neron of the Underworld. And in the backstory, we're getting Superman and Nightwing investigating a mystery at a circus. What'd you feel about this?
Awesome covers. Love the spinner rack cover one. Another great ish. I love the Cyborg line of like, this really is hell, where there's so many icons open on this desktop. That was just hilarious. Loved all the actions, fun twists and turns. This is just, Nightwing continues to be a fucking blast.
Yeah, I agree, but without the profanity. Rogue Son number 12 from Image Comics, written by Ryan Parrott, art by Abel. In this issue, big things go down for Rogue Son as he fights for his life against some enemies that are like finally at his level. Horrible things happen at the school in the process. Also, terrible things happen to the status quo of Rogue Son, which leads us directly into the super massive crossover that is coming, and it is wild where they leave him going into this. I continue to love this book.
Yeah, this is really fantastic, and so much goes down, and then, you know, spoilers, but his dad's like, yeah, I'm going to take these powers back. And it's like, yo, what? Like,
yeah. It isn't his dad. It's the medieval holder of the Rogue Son has been giving him advice as a ghost. In the middle of this fight, our Rogue Son can't handle it. And so the medieval guy is like, let me take control of the body. I can do this for you. And immediately when that happened, I was like,
let me just take your body.
And by the end of the book, of course, the medieval dude is like, no, I think I could be a better Rogue Son. Sorry.
Yeah. And sorry, bro.
It's pretty messed up, but exactly what we've been getting out of this book, these sort of big moves with the story that I've really been enjoying. Hellcat, number 2 from Marvel, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Alex Linz. This is a much more supernatural inflected take on Hellcat involving ghosts and demons and sleepwalkers and other things. What'd you feel about this issue, Pete?
Yeah, I really love the art style. It really, pulls you into this comic, which is great. Weirded out by all the, her talking to ghosts and shit. And then her talking to that stuffed bunny with the bow tie. Never trust anybody with the bow tie. And then love the kind of the heart of it, though. This is a really cool ish. I'm looking forward to reading the next one.
I really like the art on this in particular. There's some very creepy character designs and horror-inflected looks throughout. In terms of the plot, I'm having a hard time holding on to it. There's entirely too many things going on at the same time. They're all interesting individually, but there are so many of them, it ends up being a little bit of a wash to me. But I don't know. Your mileage may vary, I guess. Let's move to another horror book. Dead Sea is number 5 from IDW, written by Kevin Scott, art by Nick Brokenshire. In this book, we are following a ship that is full of ghosts. All the ghosts are free. There's also a bunch of prisoners there. All the prisoners are free. There's a bunch of pirates that are attacking it. It's all going down. It's absolute anarchy in this issue.
Cats and dogs living together. Mass hysteria.
It really is, though. And in particular, this pays off on a lot of the promise of, like, ooh, what if there was a ship full of ghosts and criminals? What would happen? Well, this is what would happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's creepy as shit. Also, those creepy baby ghosts, just so freaky. So freaky. But this, like, continues to be in scary, intense package of a great comic where the art's so intense, everything that's happening is so intense, and it meets in this Dead Sea's book, and it continues to really deliver on a hell of a ride that every issue is kind of getting more and more insane, but enjoyable.
In the absolute best way, this comic book feels like something that you would have seen on the bottom shelf in Blockbuster back in the day and be like, Dead Seas, what's that?
Yeah.
What's going on? They'd take it home and be like, oh, this is stupid and also awesome. And I'm Tower number 3 from A Wave Blue World, written by Cameron Johnson and Kelsey Barnard, art by Chris Cross, is continuing to follow a bunch of folks that are trapped in a very advanced VR game where the if you die in the game, you die in real life, I guess. We haven't specifically gotten an explanation of that, but I assume that's what's going on here. But what I liked about this issue, the second issue was a lot more confusing. There was a lot of stuff going on, but we're starting to eliminate characters at a pretty quick rate here and starting to figure out who we're focusing on. So I like that quite a bit. And as we get a revelation about the real story that's happening in this book, it really focuses it up quite a bit.
Plus, we got a little bit of insight of how it got started with the kind of creepy guys showing up at the door like, hey, you a gamer? You just got to answer 3 questions. I think that there's a ton of action in this when they get into the actual tower kind of game of it. And then the Kane reveal is very cool. I love the pace and action of this comic.
Last but not least, Hallows Eve, number 2 from Marvel, written by Erica Schultz, art by Brian Reber. In this book, we are following a character who has Halloween masks that give her different powers. She accidentally turned somebody into a werewolf last issue and is trying to track him down to hopefully get him better. Meanwhile, the Beyond Corporation, who she used to be, I'd say work for, but actually was trapped by, is also trying to track this guy down because they really want to make some more werewolves. So lots of stuff going on here, but for a concept that I was not into at all when they first introduced it, I am very into this book, 2 issues in.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little weird that it's, you know, coming out now and not near Halloween, but I do think that this is a ton of fun. I really love the art style of this. And it's cool the way she uses her masks that give her different powers. It's cool because it also taps into this feeling when you're a kid and you put on the mask of the thing and you're no longer you. You're this kind of new entity. So, like, I really kind of love the idea behind it. And I feel like it does a great job of exploring that and heightening it.
I do want some clarification in terms of how many masks she has at a certain point, though, because we definitely know she has these monster masks, right? Like, she has a vampire mask, she has a werewolf, a Frankenstein. I think there was a witch at one point as well. in this issue, she's like, and now I'm going to be a cop and put on my cop mask. And I was like, well, that's not a monster. I mean, arguably, I guess.
No, come on, bro.
But my point being, I guess my question is like, how many masks do you have in there? Are we going to get to a point where she's like, I'm going to put on my chef mask so I can cook a big dinner for somebody or what? There just needs to be some limitations there.
Although
in terms
it would
of what
be amazing if she was like, I'll put on my chef's mask. And then she's like, orky, bork, bork. That would be pretty awesome.
Oh, it's her Swedish chef's mask specifically. Yeah. All right. That's fine. If they do that, they don't have to look at the mask.
All right.
If you'd like to support our podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Wow, this is a really murderer's row of titles, Pete.
Oh, come on, man.
I meant the Yankees. It was the Yankees.
Oh, boy. Alex, Justin.